I have been a silver linings person my entire life. I could always find why everything was okay, even when it was terrible. Okay? And part of how I came to this understanding of to acknowledge and not fix is that when my mom died, there was no silver lining. I could not find one. It was just terrible, horrible, heartbreaking, devastating, earth-shattering for me. And there was nothing I could say or anyone else could say that would make that better.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And oh my goodness, it's my weekend. It's the start of my weekend. I hope it's the start of yours. If not, I still hope you have something fun planned. If you've listened at all, you know I'm a huge fan of farmers markets. And I have to say, I'm back in the Pacific Northwest now for a little bit. And we are beginning our full-blown farmers market time. I went last weekend to a farmer's market and, it was just so delightful, able to see so many wonderful fresh fruits and vegetables and, all just sorts of great things that absolutely help us heal. Because as we've talked before, diet is a key component to how we feel. So hopefully you guys have great farmer's markets in your area because that's always fun. And, you know, it's fun to see people and get out and visit too. So I hope you have something fun planned for your weekend. And I'm curled up here with a chai tea with homemade almond milk. Now, I know it's a little late for chai tea probably, but gosh, it just sounded good. I met this person at the farmer's market and they had a little store that I wasn't aware of. So I went, I drove over there this week, met them at their store, fabulous, wonderful little store. They had homemade chai tea and I was, wow, it was so good, much better than that, what I call that commercial stuff. So I'm enjoying that today. What are you curled up with? I hope it's something or someone as you listen into the Autoimmune Hour here. And I've got a very special guest that, in all honesty, I just met a couple of months ago at a conference. You never know who you're going to meet or where you're going to meet them, right? She's just an amazing lady. And she is a trainer for the Grief Recovery Institute and a mastery level transformational life coach. Isn't that fascinating? Grief Recovery Institute. I was so interested in her topic because she is an expert on compassion. And this involves practices of self-care and self-love and compassion for others, helping people rediscover the light after loss. And her name is Laura Jack. She's just a delight. And you know, when I met her, she's one of those people that you're just drawn to. And you'll find out why in this special episode. Because Laura's mission is to cultivate a culture of compassion, starting with self and to create a better understanding of loss and its accompanying grief. Welcome, Laura, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm so thrilled that you're here tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Now, when you and I chatted at this conference, and we've chatted since, you know, we found out we live not that far from each other. Isn't that funny? We go clear across the country to and meet on a conference, and we find out we live like about an hour and a half from each other. So, yeah, never know. But one of the things that we were chatting about, we were just going everywhere, but I want to start tonight on this idea of just describe to us how you describe compassion. Because I know sometimes people think that, what is compassion? They don't know. How is it different from empathy or sympathy? And they get all confused with the word.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I feel like this is something a huge thing that comes up for people. So compassion, I think of as relating kindly to someone else. So, and slash ourselves. So self-compassion just means relating kindly to myself. And the difference between compassion and empathy is that compassion is about loving kindness for somebody else who's in a time of need. So maybe they're going through a struggle. Maybe they're grieving some loss. Maybe they're just living a life that isn't the life they planned, right? So compassion is just having loving kindness for somebody who's going through something. Whereas empathy is feeling with someone. So almost feeling vicariously through somebody else's experience. And they're both beautiful. And the thing is that we have to find this balance between the compassion piece and like the loving kindness and relating kindly to others and this empathy piece. Because I don't know about you, Sharon, but I know that a lot of people who are in healing professions are empaths who consider themselves very empathic, where they feel other people's pain. They feel other people's feelings really intensely, to the point sometimes that they can barely go into a room with a ton of people because they feel so many different energies, right? And the difference between empathy and compassion is that with compassion, we are seeing them and loving them for where they are. We're not trying to fall into the depths of despair with them. Because if both people are in the depths of despair, then who's going to be able to support the other? Now, sympathy, and there's actually a really great Brené Brown little clip. If you ever go to YouTube and you can type in Brené Brown on empathy, it's an excellent little video. But she talks about sympathy, and sympathy is somebody being like, oh man, looks terrible down there. So it's not exactly where empathy is like, oh man, this is really, you know, awful. And then that person just like is falling into that depth of pain. And to me, compassion is finding the perfect balance between those two. So compassion is seeing the person in pain, feeling their pain, but not getting lost in it. And having loving kindness for them in the meantime.
That is a great explanation. Thank you. Let's take it one shift further, though. Gosh, if it's my pain and I'm practicing self-compassion, I have to admit there are times that I fall into that pit. And what are the ways that we can do self-compassion to help ourselves to build our own ladder out of that pit?
Well, I think the first step in building self-compassion is actually acknowledging that something's wrong. So part of why we get stuck in the depths of despair is because we try to ignore it and avoid it. And so the more we ignore and avoid and try to like build our ladder out, sometimes we just have to lay on the ground and be like, man, this sucks. And I'm having trouble. And this is just really, I'm having a really, really hard time. And part of what self-compassion means is being like, and that's okay. I'm okay. I'm not crazy. I'm not weird. I'm not messed up. I'm not, you know, a mess or, you know, all those things that we have this tendency to say about ourselves and even about others. I was falling apart. All those words that we describe when we're having emotional pain. The first step in self-compassion is being like, you know what? It's just hard right now. And that's okay. There's nothing like that's not bad or wrong. It's just part of the human experience. And so that first step is just acknowledgement of what you're going through without trying to fix it. Because we can't make it better until we actually just sit with it and acknowledge it and feel it, right? So I think the biggest problem is that we try to avoid that first step, which is just acknowledging that there's actually something that's going on with us emotionally that doesn't feel good.
You know, and that can be hard. I'm thinking if we lived by myself or I was, you know, in a little sheltered place by myself. But sometimes I find people tend to protect others. So they never really admit that, hey, I'm feeling down in this pit, or hey, this really sucks. They put on that brave face. And I think that keeps people falling quicker.
Absolutely. You mentioned that I was a trainer for the Grief Recovery Institute. And one of the biggest myths of grief that we teach at the Grief Recovery Institute is this idea of being strong. And being strong, what I've come to think of it as, is just AKA pretend you're fine. Pretend you're fine for everybody else because they can't handle me. I don't want to be a burden. And I just have to put on my game face and get out there and just pretend I'm okay. You know, that fake it till you make it thing. And, you know, there is something to be said for getting out there and all that. But be strong And again, not to go back to Brené Brown, I just love her so much. But
oh, she is great.
She talks about how vulnerability is what builds connection. So if you don't mind, I want to tell just a short story about being strong. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
So after my mom died, which is actually what got me into this field, is that 9 years ago, my mom was killed in a tragic accident. And it just turned my life upside down. And I realized I had no idea how to help myself. I was in the depths of despair. I was in the darkest place I'd ever been. And I just was like, I couldn't see my way out of it. I just thought, man, I'm just going to be here forever. And so I just pretended I was fine. And I decided somehow, you know, we're taught over the years, generation to generation, that being strong is the way to be. Pick yourself up by your bootstraps, they say, you know?
Yes.
And I remember for those first 9 or 10 months after my mom died, I had moved up to Seattle, actually, and my dad was still back in Texas where I grew up. And I would call my dad every day just to check on him, see how he was doing. Hey, Dad, how are you? And he'd be like, oh, I'm okay. You know, or he'd tell me the truth sometimes, like, I'm having a rough day or whatever it was. And he'd ask how I was. And I'm like, oh, fine. I'm just calling to check in on you. I was fine. I wasn't fine. I wasn't fine at all. I was being strong for him because that's what I thought I needed to be. So about 9 or 10 months into this being strong, pretending to be fine thing, where I only cry at night to my husband or, you know, late at night by myself in my bed or in the shower because I didn't want to be a burden to anyone, I called my dad crying because I was just missing my mom so much. I said, Dad, you know, I'm really missing Mom. And he said, there you are. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, you've been acting like you've been fine all this time. And I've just been so confused. Your mom was your best friend in the whole world. Like, and you've just been okay. And I just didn't understand. I was like, I've been trying to be strong for you. And his response was, Laura, you don't have to be strong for me. You're my baby. Oh. And here I am, 25 or 26 years old, just like sobbing and like, I'm so sorry. Because what I realized in all my being strong was that I had put this huge wall up between us where I was better. I was the caregiver. I was the one who was supposed to take care of him. And in reality, as soon as I told the truth, which was, I'm really struggling too. And even though we were struggling in different ways and our grief was different, it brought us together, and I was no longer having to put up this barrier of protection between us. And so I don't pretend I'm fine anymore, ever, because if I'm not, I'm not. And then what that does is it invites help.
That's a really a transformational story. Thank you for sharing that. My goodness. I was thinking of how many times on a much lesser level than that you just meet people and the automatic response is, I'm fine.
I'm fine.
Like, you meet them walking down the street. How are you? I'm fine.
So what's interesting is I actually now when people ask me, sometimes I like jump to great or fine or good or whatever. And like what my kind of intention has been, you know, overall has just been to be like, take a moment, take a breath, and actually ask myself, how am I? Like, am I doing okay? Before I actually answer with some BS thing, like, that's not true, I actually have been trying to find the honest response. And granted, you know, one of the things is you don't need to, like, then be honest with every single person on earth, right? You don't need to be like, right. Well, actually, I'm having the worst day of my life, and this is what happened. Because, you know, a lot of times we say I'm fine because we think people don't care. And some people don't care. But some people really care and we're still keeping them at bay. And so really I check in with myself. I'm like, how am I? I'm like, oh, I'm all right. Or I'm having a decent day. Or I'm having a great day. Or even if I'm having a terrible day, I'll say, you know, I'm not having the best day, but thank you so much for asking.
No, that's a nice way to put it. I love that. And I know that's part of your book on how to say the right thing. I'll mess up the title. Share the title and then move.
So it's called The Compassion Code, How to Say the Right Thing When the Wrong Thing Happens.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to say it. I'm looking forward to the book coming out. We need to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with Laura Jack on more great information about compassion, self-compassion, and how to talk about, you know, what's going on in your life. Because, you know, with autoimmune, it can vary very quickly. So we'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and we're here today with Laura Jack from LauraJack.com, and she is just an amazing expert on the topic of compassion, self-compassion, grief recovery, compassion for others. And we've been talking about it in the realm of autoimmune and our own self-care. So welcome back, Laura. Thanks for that. Your story of your mom passing was so beautiful, and this idea of saying, I'm fine when we're not fine. And how not to overshare. I think that was a critical message I got there at the end was, know your intention, know the context, and be aware of who you're sharing with. Because we certainly don't want to say to the person in front of us in the checkout line, our entire life story. How many of us, raising my hand, have met those people and gone, oh no, I don't want to be that person.
And you just have to check in and find out, like, is this an okay time for me to share? And sometimes, those things come out, where you end up sharing with the person next to you in the airplane or the person in front of you in line, where you end up having this half an hour conversation where you're like sobbing and you're like, oh my God. And I think part of self-compassion is just being like, you know what? That was exactly what I needed. And they probably needed to hear it for some reason, some learning, some growth that they needed. So it's about being compassionate towards yourself when you do go through that. And then if you haven't gone through it, then you just say, you know what? I want to tell them something. I want to be honest, but I just don't need to be so honest that it's just not really, then I don't feel safe later.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think that's a critical thing to keep in mind. Now, one of the fascinating things that this is just the science of Sharon, folks, but one of the things I found in all the 120 plus interviews I've done for the Autoimmune Hour, a lot of them have a lot of history of emotional things happening to them and this awareness of that. Maybe they're not aware of it sometimes. From our work with Dr. David Clark, him saying the discovery of things that they had repressed. As we begin to sort of uncover how we deal with our autoimmune diagnosis and understanding that maybe our own emotions could play into this, how do we forgive ourselves for some of those things? Maybe people are holding grievances that they remember. It's interesting what people hold on to. How do you find that people learn to deal with those past issues?
Well, that's an interesting way to look at that. This is how I kind of look at it through the lens of grief recovery and what I've learned through helping people with all the losses of their lives, which is that we have all this loss, because everything in life, you know, as we define grief at the Grief Recovery Institute, it's the conflicting feelings that come at the end of or change in a familiar pattern of behavior.
Ooh, can you say that again? That is really good.
Yes, it's the conflicting feelings that come at the end of or change in a familiar pattern of behavior. So grief isn't just the bad, sad, hard, terrible feelings. It's actually the conflict that comes when things change in our lives. So we'll use autoimmune as an example for a moment, because that's what our listeners are here for, which is when we are diagnosed with an autoimmune, there's aspects of you that are devastated, and there's aspects of you that are, you know, maybe even heartbroken. And then there's this loss of trust in our body. And then there's this other part of you that's grateful that you figured out what was going on, because maybe it's been this long journey of trying to figure it out. And so there might be some relief, right? Of like, oh, thank God, I finally know what it is. And maybe I can actually do something about it. And then they find somebody like you, Sharon, who has some answers and some supportive help around holistic healing. And they feel even more relief. And they're like, okay. So I think that is hopefully a description for you of what the grief can feel like. It's conflicting feelings. It's not all the bad things. It's like, well, I feel this, but I also feel this. So for example, when somebody goes through a divorce, part of them, particularly if they chose the divorce, feels relieved because, you know, I'm so sick of the fighting, or I'm so sick of this. And it was, you know, hard. Our relationship wasn't good anymore. That I don't like living in a loveless marriage, whatever it is. And then part of them feels a loss of hopes, dreams, and expectations. Mm. So when they signed up to get married, they thought, I'll be married for the rest of my life. So part of them may feel like, oh, I failed, or what did I do wrong? Or maybe part of them feels like, how did I not see that this person was a sociopath? Or how did I not see this? And so there's these conflicting feelings, or, man, I really thought we were going to make it, and we're not. And what's this going to do to our families, to our friends, to our children? Right? There's these conflicting feelings of relief and burden, and pain and joy, right? So that's how we define grief. And what that does is it allows us to see what loss really is. That loss isn't just the death, or it's not just the end of a relationship. It's the end and beginning of anything that causes a conflicting feeling in us that caught when things change.
Oh, so let me just see if I'm hearing correctly, that loss is really just that time of transition.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I feel about it, is that transition, change, and transition can be death. You know, people even use that as a way to describe death, as they transitioned. It's not my favorite way of describing death, but it somehow it's made its way into that realm, right? Or when we turn 40, that's a transition. When you graduate from school, that's a transition. When you have children, that's a transition. When you empty nest. So these are all times where we actually grieve, because it's the end of something and the beginning of something new.
Mm, that's a great way to talk about it. Thank you for sharing that. That puts it in a completely different perspective, because I can see once you get a shocking diagnosis, a diagnosis that maybe you've had symptoms for a long time, and it's a relief to finally have somebody say, oh, X diagnosis.
Yeah, it can be very validating. You're like, I knew there was something wrong. How could, like, you know, and then there's frustration. Like, why didn't anybody find it sooner?
And then there's the feeling of loss. Like, oh my gosh, what does that diagnosis mean?
Right. What does this mean about me? What does this mean for my family? What about my health? What about my longevity? All those kinds of questions that come up. And so those are very normal and natural responses. And that's my goal with grief stuff and with the compassion, is that we just start to normalize our feelings around when things are changing. Like, it's okay to have all of those feelings. None of them are bad or wrong. They just are.
Which is fascinating to me, because I remember vividly the day I got my diagnosis. I'd known for a long time something wasn't right. However, when I started developing a lot of visible symptoms, the doctor who had been treating me walked into the room, and I could just tell from her body language, the micro expressions of shock on her face, her dropping her chin and looking down at the floor, her excusing herself from the room, saying she'd be right back, she forgot something. Well, even though I'm a body language expert, it didn't take a body language expert to go, uh-oh, that didn't look good. So it's fascinating that even in a profession where they're used to giving bad news, unfortunately, just the way that the news was delivered to me sort of heightened my anxiety about it, because they were unprepared to tell me. We had developed a relationship, even though it was a doctor-patient relationship, I think you still get a connection going. And she didn't want to deliver the bad news.
Just in kind of going back to what I teach, doctors only get one class in college on bedside manner. So it's not shocking that she didn't know how, because it's scary, because she cares about you and she doesn't want to. She doesn't want to give you that news. And so it's coming back to this human factor that's like, yeah, people just don't know what to say about hard things. She didn't know how to say, man, I'm so surprised. And we're going to try to get through this together. Like, I'm going to help you figure out whatever way we can to make this work for us so that, you know, we can work with the disease, not against it, you know? And so it's just one of those things, though, that's not something that we teach in school, not in elementary, middle, high school, college, medical school, or any school. And so it's not surprising, but how devastating for you to then see, like, okay, here's my professional, and she's scared. So how am I supposed to feel?
Right. Well, absolutely. That went through my mind for a moment. Then I also, the analytical part of me started dissecting the body language and everything else. So making myself fine on the outside as well, but immediately leaving the room and pulling out the phone and Googling what she just said, because it was a big word that I had no clue what it really meant. So, oh my goodness, so many places we could go with this. Now, I want to chat a little bit, because I know you're an expert in talking about this, or helping people learn to talk about it. When we're in those situations, we've talked a little bit about self-talk, but I want to be sure and come up with ways that we can tell other people what's going on. I remember when I said the word autoimmune to my elderly family members, they had an entirely different understanding of what the word autoimmune meant. They did not know that it was over 120 different types of conditions. They only had one label for autoimmune. And it was very difficult to have those conversations. So when we come back from this quick commercial break, we're going to talk about with Laura, how do you have those conversations when somebody says, well, what is wrong with you? So we'll be back with Laura Jack right after this quick commercial break, and we'll talk to her about how do you talk to others about what's going on with your diagnosis.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times. 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and this is the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. We're here with Laura Jack, and she is a speaker on the topic of compassion. I'll say the art of compassion with Laura, because she really makes it into a beautiful art as she begins to explain how do we have compassion for ourselves that we've been talking about for the top first part of the show, and now we're going to switch it about talking to other people. And because she is a trainer in the for the Grief Recovery Institute and a mastery level transformational life coach. And she uses practices of self-care and self-love to help people rediscover their light after loss. Now, Laura, I know with your forthcoming book, The Compassion Code, share a little bit about the opposite side that when we have to tell people, I remember when I told my mom my diagnosis, I'm not sure that even with all my training, I said it in the most compassionate way. I was trying to be fine and very matter of fact and delivering shocking news. So if we're taking it from the opposite side of what we just talked about, self-love and self-compassion, what are some ways we can tell people bad news?
So my favorite thing that I've learned over these years of coaching and learning about grief is that no matter how you slice it, it's not going to be fun. Okay. So it's not fun to tell somebody anything bad that's going on for us. Fun as it is to tell people good news, it's equally as unfun to tell them bad news. And so I think part of it is offering a preframe. Preframing means setting people up in advance. So before you tell them what's going on for you, saying, I want you to know that I'm going to share something with you that may be upsetting to you. And I'm going to give you as much information as I can about what I know. And I'll answer any questions that you have. But right now, like, I just need you to know that this is hard for me as well. And we're going to get through this together. Okay. So they're already like, oh crap.
Yeah. I could see maybe somebody's face just starting to freak out at that moment.
Yeah. And it's okay. It's okay for them to freak out. They love you. So like, it's all right for them to be worried. It's okay for them to be scared. So we're going to be compassionate toward them by understanding that their response is their response and it's okay. So you set them up by saying, I'm going to share some news with you. I would rather be not sharing this news with you, but it has to be said. And I'm going to answer any questions that I know the answer to, and I'm going to tell you what I know, and just know that we're going to get through this together. So something like that, right? Especially with like a parent who is going to hopefully support you through this journey, right? Or a spouse or a best friend or something like that. And then you proceed to tell them. So I went to the doctor and I knew that there were, as you may know, you know, there have been some things that have been going on for me and I've been trying to figure out what's been going on. And so in some ways I feel relieved because now I know I've been given a diagnosis, and in other ways I feel devastated, which is normal, right? So you're letting them know that your feelings are normal, right? So you're like, I feel relieved to know what happened, if that's true for you. And, you know, and I feel really nervous and devastated that this is going on. And then they'll say, okay, like what happened? And there's like a little bit of buildup, but I think that that's helpful because now they know that what they're about to receive isn't good. So then you tell them what happened. So whatever diagnosis you received. So I've been diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. And what that means is this. It means that then you tell them about the disease, whatever it is. Like, here are some of the best case and here are some of the worst case scenarios, and we don't know yet. Here's the treatment plan if there is one. And you may even invite them before you start talking to say, would you just sit quietly and listen while I share with you what this means? So that they, like, you're setting them up for success by them not interrupting you or like, you know, and if they start crying or they start, you know, being really upset, you can say, it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be nervous. It's okay to be scared. I feel the same way, or I feel similarly. we're validating the feelings they have. And, you know, sometimes it's hard when you're the one who's received the diagnosis to see other people get upset because you're like, this is about me. Like, why are you crying? But like, guess what? It's also about them because they love you and they care about you. And so just remembering that, like, they're going to have their loss experience too. And I'd like to tell just a tiny side story because I think it might be helpful. And it's not 100% the same situation as what we're talking about, but I think it will be helpful to those listening.
Wonderful.
The night I found out that my mom died, my friends, I was renting a hostel down in Central America in Panama. And I was out visiting my boyfriend on a different island, which is in the middle of nowhere in the Caribbean. Okay. And so it's a 45-minute boat ride from town where I lived. And so nobody, there was no internet, there was no cell phone. And so that night when I received the news, my friends who had spoken to my father and found out that my mom had died had sent a note through a boat captain back to the island where I was staying to let me know that I needed to call my dad and come back on the boat. And so the next morning when I get back into town, my business partners were sitting on the bed waiting for me. And I remember I walk in the room. I'm like, how was your night? And they're like, terrible. I'm like, why? Like, I thought something happened at the bar because we ran a bar. And they're like, your mom died. And I was like, oh, yeah, this, it affects other people besides me. Like, I just, for whatever reason, I was like trying to proceed like business as usual, you know, guys, like here I am leaving to go like home for my mom's funeral. My mom just died. My friends know my mother. And of course they're devastated too, because it's my mom and they love me. But I was so thrown off. I was like, oh my gosh, of course. Like, that makes total sense. But my first thought was like, what was wrong at the bar last night? And they're like, no, Laura, your mom died. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. So do you see the correlation here that like...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember when I told my mom just about my diagnosis, which is, didn't know what it meant, even though I tried to explain to her what it meant. Interestingly enough, she didn't hear everything I said. She was in such a state of shock that she wasn't... I was already in a state of shock, but then you're trying to tell it to someone who's in a state of shock. And that's just ripe for miscommunications, misunderstandings, false starts, all sorts of things like that, with everybody in shock and grieving in their own way. Now, you were grieving for your mother, but wanting to be strong for your friends, and your friends were grieving and wanting to be strong for you in different ways. People just get very confused. It was maybe 2 or 3 days later, she called me and wanted to talk about it again. And I thought, well, Mom, we talked about this. But then I stopped and realized, well, you know, she went into shock. I don't think she heard everything I said.
Absolutely. And what a great, like, that was you being compassionate to her. Because as somebody who is sharing their diagnosis, remember, you've had a little extra time to process than the person who's hearing the news right now. And so you giving them a moment and making, like, you obviously have to read the situation and then really try to not be mad at them about how they respond. Maybe they shut down and they're like, oh, or they pretend it isn't happening. It isn't because they don't love you. It's because they don't know how to handle it. And so that shock, that fear, some people just shut down. And I'm grateful that your mom called you back to be like, can you tell me more? Like, and she may not have even said, I didn't really fully hear you because I was in so much shock, but you...
No, but she didn't say that. She was just, she said she was confused. And minus dermatomyositis. Well, you know, that could be supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Yeah, exactly. What
does that mean? You know, it's not, I don't want to make light of the well-known ones, but it's lupus. Well, some people go, oh, well, I've heard of that. Or Crohn's disease. I've heard of that. But when you give somebody a word, they're just like, what did you say? Mm-hmm. It took me a couple years to figure out how to spell it even. So I just assumed, because I know when I heard it from my doctor, I went into shock. Mm-hmm. As you said, she came from love and she was like, can you tell me more about that? Can you tell me that again?
And that may be another great thing to say to somebody as you're sharing your diagnosis is, if you want to continue having conversations about this over the next few days or weeks, as I learn more and as we figure this out, I want to do that with you, because that will be helpful for both of you. It will, because you probably need to continue processing it out loud as well on some level. So you giving them the benefit of the doubt that they're not just being a jerk, that they're just, why don't they care? Why are they making it about them? Well, there is some aspect of your life that is about them because they love you. And so it's really being compassionate towards them and their experience and being compassionate towards yourself. And then finding friends, like building your team of people who you can really talk to, who aren't going to try to fix it, who aren't going to try to say the right thing, who are just going to be there and love you, right? And who are, you can like guide them as you figure out what you want them to say the right thing to you.
One of the things I found, though, that, because that's such an excellent suggestion, is right when we find something out, whether it's a diagnosis or just any sort of surprise, we're in the moment reliving it. And so the story that we begin to tell is very different when we're reliving a story. And then we get to that point where we've told the story enough that we're retelling mm-hmm. the story. And we're past that shock, we're past the surprise, and we begin to really be able to open our ears and hear what other people are saying once we're past the emotional reliving it into the retelling it. And I love that concept of having someone in your corner, or maybe little tribe of someone's in your corner, that are just willing to listen until you get to that point where you can talk about what's going on for you. Like right now, talking about dermatomyositis or autoimmune is just part of my everyday. It's not something that I live and think about every day, but with the autoimmune hour and everything, I'm retelling. It's no longer reliving, even though it's something that I live with every day. And I think that helps in the healing process when we're able to make that shift. And like you said, with people that listen to you, you're able to quickly make that shift between those two chasms of reliving or retelling.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I love that.
Now, one of the things I wanted to share, that going back to what you said just a couple of minutes ago, though, is what I so appreciated as how you said how to tell someone was you expressed emotions. You said, I'm feeling this or I'm feeling that. And I love that because it allowed the other person to go, oh, you mean it's okay for me to feel shock and grief and sadness too? To my mind, I love that. That was allowing them to feel that with you. They didn't have to have that brave face. I just thought that was critically important.
Yeah. And you know, you never know what you're going to come up against, because sometimes you tell people how you're feeling and they might, who knows, like if you come from a family who doesn't express emotion, they may be like, oh, stop being a drama queen. Or sometimes people say pretty awful things and they don't necessarily mean them. They just don't know what to say. And so they just say things that can be really hurtful to us. And so I just encourage you, if somebody does say something where they just really speak out a line, not to like just shut them out of your life immediately, but to give them the benefit of the doubt that they were probably freaking out and didn't have a clue of what to do or say, give them another chance and like let them know, hey, when you said that, it wasn't helpful, or this would be helpful. If you would like to support me, this is how you can. This is how, what would be supportive. This is what would be helpful. People can't read your mind and they don't know. And so it's best as you figure out what's helpful for you to let them know. Because the ones who are going to stand by your side, the ones you love, your support team, your support tribe, as you put it, which I love, they're open to suggestions most likely because they really don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I have my own little support tribe. And what's wonderful is it's not just one way. I support them and all of their things going on right now. One of them just had surgery, and so we're all gathered around with that going on of the speedy recovery from the surgery. So it, when you develop those close connections, as you say, with compassion and honesty and emotional honesty, it can be so profoundly changing and life healing. Even if a lot of my friends say to me, I have no clue what you're going through, mm-hmm. but I'm still here. I'm here for you.
And that's one of the best things you could say, honestly, is I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I just want to be here. I just want to support you. Can you tell me how? As you figure it out, can you tell me? Because I want to.
And I call that compassionate listening, because oftentimes people, when they're trying to fix you too fast, jump the gun and say, or they start sending you tweets about, oh, I went on the internet and here's, you know, some waving a chicken over your head type of healing thing or whatever, being very gracious and saying, thank you. However, listening would probably just be better here at this point or something like that. Those types of things popped into my head because I had, when the diagnosis first came to light, I had a lot of well-meaning people, but it was very hard for me, which added stress on me, to say thank you. However, I'm pursuing other healing processes or things like that because I knew it was coming from love, but it was still tough to be bombarded with too much information.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things, and you asked me at the beginning of the call what the definition of compassion was, and I want to add another little thing in here, which is compassion is to acknowledge and not fix.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Oh my goodness. Laura, we need to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back right after that and learn more about this. Compassion is to listen but not fix. Did I say that right?
Compassion is to acknowledge and not fix.
Acknowledge and not fix. Okay. And listening's part of that.
So absolutely.
Got in there.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll be right back. Just folks, just listen to this quick commercial break.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and we're here with Laura Jack, the author of the upcoming Compassion Code, and she is a speaker on the topic of compassion, a trainer for the Grief Recovery Institute, and a mastery-level transformational life coach. And we've been talking about this idea of compassion for ourselves and others. And right before we had to take that quick commercial break, Laura had a great definition of compassion. Share it one more time, Laura.
Compassion is to acknowledge and not fix.
Oh, I love that. How many times do we have loved ones who we immediately, even let's take it out of our diagnosis, you say something very mundane and they, you know, maybe you're upset at something at work or something like that, and they immediately jump in with all sorts of solutions to fix, and you just, oftentimes, I just wanted you to listen, or
yeah.
I just wanted you to know there's nothing that needs to be done.
Yeah. So I want to share that if you are the kind of person who likes to fix, I want you to be compassionate to yourself in the next few minutes as I try to explain this, because I too was you. I love to fix. I have been a silver linings person my entire life. I could always find why everything was okay, even when it was terrible. Okay. And part of how I came to this understanding of to acknowledge and not fix is that when my mom died, there was no silver lining. I could not find one. It was just terrible, horrible, heartbreaking, devastating, earth-shattering for me. And there was nothing I could say or anyone else could say that would make that better.
And so I realized all the things that I used, and I even tried doing it to myself. Well, at least she was walking when she died. At least she was happy. At least blah, blah, blah. And all that did was diminish how I felt, because how I felt was terrible. But me putting all these silver linings on it was me trying to fix it. And it wasn't for the fixin', as we say in the South. It wasn't for fixin'. It was, you know, it was for acknowledging. It was for validating the feelings I had as being okay and natural. And so I'll use the example of my husband, which is he'll come home and he may have had a bad day. And it used to be that I'd say, oh, but like, let's be grateful, or what can we be grateful for? And that's okay. Gratitude's amazing. And first it's like, oh man, that sucks. Sorry you had such a bad day. Or like, are you frustrated? Or yeah, that's frustrating. Or whatever it is that he's feeling or saying he's feeling. First, I just acknowledge it before I jump into my gratitude, silver linings, whatever that he doesn't really want to hear.
Right. Well, you know, when you said gratitude, I agree. Gratitude's amazing, but it's all about context and timing.
Exactly.
If your timing is off, gratitude can just sound like a platitude. And so...
Absolutely.
Well, we're just about out of time, Laura. This is fantastic. I so appreciate your insights on this and how to talk to people, how to talk to ourselves, too. It's so critically important. This is part of our healing, is to understand this part that really doctors don't share with you. As Laura shared, they have very limited training in it, and often our friends or family are just in shock and grief themselves over it and not understanding it. And so, along with our own shock and grief, so thank you so much, Laura, for being our guest. I read some parts of your forthcoming book, and I'm so excited for it to come out. Tell everybody more about the book, when it's coming out, and your website, so how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, so my book is coming out this summer, so in August. And the ebook, the little free preview book, is actually available now. So if they want to find that, they can go to laurajack.com/compassioncode. So laurajack.com/compassioncode, and it's just a free little ebook that they can get that'll give them about 10 pages or 11 pages of little insights into some of the things we are talking about today. And then if they want to find me otherwise, they can just go to my website, which is laurajack.com, and I have so many amazing free resources, both how to support yourself to rediscover your light after loss, how to the Compassion Code Starter Kit, and so many other just articles I've written, blogs I've written. So if you yourself are grieving, whether it's over your autoimmune or something else that's going on in your life, there's a great section of resources there that are free that'll be able to support you, hopefully through whatever it is that you're going through. And so thank you again, Sharon, for having me. It's been such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful. And this is a topic we don't give enough voice to. And I just want to make sure that everyone knows it's Laura, L-A-U-R-A, and Jack is just the familiar spelling of Jack, J-A-C-K. Nothing fancy to that one. I was thinking many people might put like a Q or anything in there, but it's just Laura Jack, just as we might think it would be. It's laurajack.com. And I'll have that up there on lifeinterruptedradio.com as well. So if you guys can't quite remember that, you'll see it there in the show description as well. So thank you so much, Laura, for being our guest on the Autoimmune Hour. It's been my pleasure. We'll have to have you back when the book comes out just to get more details and more information, and also even more reminders, because oftentimes at some level we know this, yet we still trip over it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Everyone, join me next Friday for another episode of the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. It's always my pleasure to share the beginning of my weekend. Go make a great weekend, whatever your adventures. And as always, enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, "Sorry, I'm rambling," you say, "Thank you for listening." Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free, non-religious resource on global forgiveness.